We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, what is up, everybody? Welcome inside the Guilty as Charged podcast, coming to you live on a Saturday. Here to talk about some Chargers offensive coordinator interviews and requests for those interviews. We're also going to do our top 10 Chargers of the season. And then, of course, we will spend basically, you know, the back half of this show taking some questions. I'm sure we'll get a lot of off-season questions today. So, excited to dive in with my guys, Tyler and Alex. Tyler, we'll start with you, man. What's up? How are you doing this morning?
I was doing okay. Then I started to look at my list again, and I got a giant headache trying to sort through all these players. So, you know, we'll talk about it. I'll see how it goes. But it was tough to make this list for sure.
Yeah, this all of the injuries kind of make things a mess. Pretty messy this year in terms of top 10 lists. So, excited to see what we come up with. We have not shared our list with each other just yet. We'll do it live with you guys. So going to be a fun reaction there. Alex, what's up, man? I have to say, because of Kaiser White and Britton Covey, I am rooting for your Eagles today. So I hope they're able to pull off a win against the Giants. But how are you doing this afternoon?
Doing good. Doing good. Some people think that I might be wearing the Eagles shirt today for the Eagles. However, it is the Super Bowl 52 shirt right here for one Frank Reich. So if we can get him going today and get the interview requested, then, you know, it'll all be worth it.
There we go. You know, speaking it into existence there, and also, you know, dressing for the occasion as for the birds today. All right. So as I mentioned, we'll dive into some of the Chargers offensive coordinator interview requests today. There's only been three, so it's not like we have a ton to really dive into, but three guys that we did not really talk a whole lot about on our offensive coordinator, or at all, really, on our show on Wednesday in terms of Chargers offensive coordinator candidates. So Brandon Staley and Tom Telesco both said that they're going to do an extensive search for this position. They're going to interview a lot of people. So I don't necessarily think we should be making any kind of general takeaways at this point in time. Alex talking about Frank Reich. Frank Reich's doing head coaching interviews right now. So, you know, I can't imagine he in particular would be interested in interviewing for offensive coordinators until that whole situation is settled. So, a lot of people freaking out on Twitter, and I'm sure there will be some people here in the chat who are upset about the lack of experience. Just take a step back for a little bit. It's just the three requests. You know, there's not a whole lot to at least panic about. at least not yet. So first and foremost, the Chargers did put in an interview request for Vikings. Is he the offensive coordinator, right? Vikings offensive coordinator, Wes Phillips.
Yes.
He did decide not to take the interview. He's happy in Minnesota and is willing to build there with the Vikings and what he's been able to work with Kirk Cousins and Kevin O'Connell this year. And then obviously the more popular one, Chargers did officially put in an interview request for Zach Robinson, the Rams quarterbacks coach and passing game coordinator. And then today came out that the Chargers have put in an interview for Gerard Johnson, the assistant quarterbacks coach in Minnesota, played a few years in the NFL as a practice squad player. He's been on Frank Reich's staff, speaking of Frank Reich, and also Kyle Shanahan's staff. So pretty clear indication of where the Chargers are looking. But Alex, we'll start with you. Any big takeaway about any of these three interview requests so far?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing with Wes Phillips that's interesting is that the Vikings weren't the ones who turned that down. It was Wes Phillips himself that did turn that interview down. And I think there's been a lot of conversation about whether the Chargers are kind of the best offensive coordinator job or not, right? Because on paper, you kind of look at them and it's like they have Justin Herbert, right? You kind of have everything an offensive coordinator wants. But are you kind of more comfortable with Kevin O'Connell, who's pretty clearly, you know, not on the hot seat, and then just kind of waiting it out potentially towards next offseason, as opposed towards taking an interview now and potentially getting the Chargers job and then being in a situation with Brandon Staley where he's on the hot seat? And, you know, there's been a lot of NFL insiders who have, you know, kind of compared the openings. So I think that's going to be something that affects the Chargers search. Zach Robinson, no surprise. And yeah, I think that when you just kind of look at the guys that they are kind of clearly going after, there's a very much a theme of, hey, have you ever met Kyle Shanahan or Sean McVay? Then we're kind of interested. So there's a 6 degrees of that game too. Gerard Johnson is an interesting interview. I think if anything, that seems to be more of like a quarterback's coach type of interview. I think it's noteworthy that he was on both Shanahan and Frank Reich staffs, so that's worth pointing out for, you know, potentially kind of either working as the QB coach potentially under Frank Reich or working as the QB coach in any Charger system where they're running a West Coast type offense that Brandon Staley has indicated that he wants. So overall, not a ton of takeaways yet until we get, you know, more candidates and more second interviews. But I mean, this is about how I kind of expected the search to start.
Yeah, I guess I don't know how I expected it to start, but Alex hit on most of the points and most of the connections and most of the themes. Again, if you knew Brandon Staley or you knew someone who knew Brandon Staley, congratulations, you got an interview or a request for an interview. And then even with the linebackers coach that they're going to interview, Howard, I always forget his first name because we kept saying it wasn't Ryan.
Jeff.
Jeff Howard, you know, knows Ryan Ficken and, of course, Staley. It's all about connections at the early stage of this interview process. I'm surprised at the lack of like veteran. I guess I'm not surprised. I noticed the trend that there's a lack of veteran experience because we started off, you know, most of our top 3 to 4 guys, whether it be Joe Brady, whether it be Frank Reich, or if you mentioned Frank Smith or Mike LaFleur, like these guys all had experience calling plays. And it just seems like, you know, maybe they're not going there just yet. With that said, there's a lot of time left. So overall, it's a long-winded way of me saying that, like, I don't really have much of a takeaway yet. Now, if they go out and they hire Zach Robinson and they have one other interview and that's it, then I'm going to have more questions and more things to say. But for right now, you know, it's very early on. And I think when some of the teams start losing, of course, like today and tomorrow, like once these teams start losing, maybe some more attractive candidates are officially free and they might just go interview those guys in the coming weeks.
Yeah, that's I'm still in kind of wait and see mode in terms of who they interview. Like Tyler, if this is all that they're interviewing, then yeah, we have a big problem. But you know, Brandon Staley said that they're going to do an extensive search, and I think that there is some stock to put into what like Mike Garafolo was talking about in terms of like weighing the Chargers opening versus the Ravens opening. But there's still no question that the Chargers are a better opening than like the Washington Commanders, who might be starting Sam Howell all of next season, you know, or any of these other teams who need offensive coordinators, like the Patriots, who are also only interviewing people that Bill Belichick has spent time with. So, you know, the Chargers definitely still have a very attractive offensive coordinator opening. You know, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers fired their offensive coordinator. They're not going to have Tom Brady. Like, are they starting Blaine Gabbert next year? Like, so it's just a lot of lot up in the air for the other teams. I mean, we still think that the Chargers would be the most attractive opening outside of, you know, maybe the Ravens. So I still think that we'll wait and see. You know, a lot of the best candidates that we talked about are still coaching this weekend. So, you know, it is possible that they're just kind of trying to wait and see in that regard. And then, you know, if they're a veteran head coach who's trying to, you know, become a head coach, then you've got to wait and see what happens there. So not a ton of takeaways in terms of who they've interviewed. Jerod Johnson, I think for me, is pretty clearly like a, more of a quarterback's coach opening. I think that'd be a fine hire.
Yeah.
If they decided to go that route. I mean, like I said, he spent some time in the league. He's been on the Shanahan staff. He's been on Kevin O'Connell's staff. He's been on Frank Reich's staff. So I do think that he would be, you know, a good candidate to fill Shane Day's role. Obviously, the more popular one, the big name, I guess, if you will, is Zach Robinson. So, Alex, as you've kind of had some time to dig in more into Zach Robinson and his background a little bit, and obviously the clips from PFF in his days there went viral this weekend a little bit, in part because, you know, Arjun was the first to retweet it, and then, you know, everybody else kind of hopped on board. But has anything that you've learned over the past couple of days about Zach Robinson maybe made you change your mind about where you would put him in your rankings?
I wouldn't put him in my top five, but I mean, he's just kind of like on the outside of it. Like, I don't have a problem with him, but also, you know, one of the things that I feel like I prioritized particularly in my list was coaching experience for, you know, a pretty long time, and also play calling experience. And right now for Zach Robinson, he just doesn't have either. Now the Chargers could hire him and he could be a fantastic, you know, off the McVay tree, and, you know, and like we keep rolling, like a lot of the McVay tree stuff has been with O'Connell last year taking over the Vikings, right? So yeah, I mean, like, there's a chance that he's really good, and I think he's a really smart guy. It in terms of how I did my list, he wouldn't be one of the top guys that I'm looking at, based on the fact that the Chargers kind of need the highest percentage chance of having a successful offensive coordinator, and having a first-time OC isn't all that attractive to me. But I mean, obviously the potential is there, you know, coming from the McVay system and being a very young, bright mind per a lot of people in the league.
Yeah, I appreciate the Pro Football Focus connection, because that would help us tremendously in so many ways. So that'll be great. As far as him being a first-time coordinator or offensive coordinator, at least like the resume does look good leading up to it. Someone like Jerod Johnson, I think, can definitely get there, but it just seems like the jump from assistant quarterbacks coach to offensive coordinator would be huge. For someone like Zach Robinson, you have him working with the wide receivers, you have him working with the quarterbacks, you have him be the passing game coordinator. Like, he's added responsibility throughout the years with a good head coach over him. So, you know, I don't think he'd be my top three candidates per se, but I do think, you know, either in the top five kind of at the end or just outside the top five would be, you know, pretty solid. I'm not like in love with the idea outside of the connections part, but like there's no red flags here. It seems like this is a guy who, you know, has worked under good coaches, who knows. If someone tweeted today, I forget who it was, a clip where he literally said a marriage of the run and the pass game in his press conference, and I was like, oh geez, yeah. You know, you're saying the exact same things, perfect for the interview, all the buzzwords. So, you know, I think that, you know, Brandon Staley might want to go find someone like this. So it wouldn't be surprised if I wouldn't be surprised if this was the guy.
Yeah, I think it was that account that their username is like a play on words of like Max Kellerman. I forget exactly the way that he had it spelled. But yeah, I mean, it was an interesting clip. I think, you know, you've seen some interesting things come out about him. Obviously, he was very high on Justin Herbert, which I think is a good thing, and was able to really highlight the strengths of Justin Herbert as a prospect, which was really cool to see. But I agree. I don't think he's in my top five. I don't think I would put him as my honorable mention candidate. I still would have him kind of on the outside looking in. But I fully would understand why Brandon Staley would make that hire. I think he's a schematic fit. I think he's a philosophy fit. You know, I reached out to a couple people about Zach Robinson, and a couple of people told me that Staley and Zach Robinson are not necessarily like friends. Like, they're not buddy-buddy. Like, Kevin O'Connell and him are like best buds. Like, that was a thing. But there's a good working relationship there. Like, they did interact quite a bit. They do have some experience working together. So it would be a personality fit as well. So that those are not like the end all be all in terms of what you're looking for an offensive coordinator. But I think it's pretty clear that Brandon Staley wants somebody who maybe fits what he has in mind for the offense better. And I think Zach Robinson would do that. Like Alex was saying, I think it's just an experience thing for me. I know he's worked with the receivers and I know he's worked with the quarterbacks, but I just am hesitant to make somebody an offensive coordinator who's been in the league for 3 years. I think this upcoming season would be his fourth season in the NFL as a coach. Is that right? Yeah. Or maybe it'd be fifth.
I mean, so that's also just why I kind of look at, like, I don't know, Joe Brady or Mike LaFleur, and why I personally have them on my list higher is like, yeah, maybe they didn't do their best at an offensive coordinator position, but they've had a season of experience or two seasons of experience in LaFleur's case and have had a chance to, you know, evaluate and, you know, kind of improve in that way. Versus with Zach Robinson, you've had a lot of first time bumps, I feel like, along the road, potentially to his path towards becoming like a really good offensive coordinator. So that's just kind of my thing on that. But yeah, it was funny seeing the run, marrying the run game to the pass game clip and just, you know, thinking of all like the Staley buzzwords. Oh, the Rams have experienced a lot of attrition at the, you know, this year. And we got the Chargers got to be better in the offense, defense, and the kicking game, right? So I'm sure he'll come into the interview like that.
The real test is going to be to find a clip of him saying football playing Jesse, and then we'll really know.
Yeah.
In all seriousness, again, I think Zach Robinson is a fine candidate. I think if you're like tiering the potential hires, like I would understand that hiring. If Zach Robinson is the guy, I think it's not, I don't think it's like a disaster. I don't think it's like a bad hiring by any means. I just think that there are better opportunities, better candidates out there that this team can be searching for right now. All right. So in terms of the offensive coordinator, there is one thing people keep asking me. So I'm going to ask you guys, we're going to talk about it. Byron Leftwich has been fired. Greg Roman has been fired. Arjun had a lot of fun on the poll yesterday on Twitter talking about those two candidates along with Joe Lombardi. Tyler, any inclination on your part to interview either of those candidates?
I mean, if you want to interview them, that's fine. If you interview Jason Garrett for head coach, you can interview anybody you want. You know, because an interview is an interview, and you never really know, I guess. But the notion from the one, you know, quote unquote insider that Greg Roman was the perfect fit for Justin Herbert, I thought that was a bit surprising to say the least. So, if you want to hire or if you want to interview them, you know, by all means, there is experience there at least. That's not quite the experience I'd be leaning towards, but I don't think there's anything wrong with at least giving them a call.
Yeah, I'll start with Greg Roman in particular. I think like bringing him in as a run game coordinator, like, yeah, sign me up. Absolutely. You know, it's just we have over 10 years of experience now with Greg Roman and as an offensive coordinator, and we know what kind of offense he wants to run and what kind of offense gives him problems and what kind of quarterback specifically he needs to run his offense most effectively. And Justin Herbert is not that quarterback. So interview Greg Roman if you want. I think his experience is something that you could maybe tap into in that regard, but I'm not really interested in either one of these. I mean, Byron Leftwich, people point to like the good years of Tampa Bay, but as soon as Bruce Arians retires, everything kind of goes up in flames with the Tampa Bay offense. And some of that is personnel, obviously. I just think Byron Leftwich isn't necessarily the kind of coach that Brandon Staley is looking for either. So if you want to interview Greg Roman, I'm cool with it. I don't see this team being interested in Byron Leftwich at all, essentially.
Yeah, to me, it has nothing to do with either of them being fired, because I feel like the tendency is just like, oh, well, that guy was fired. He's garbage, right? Like, don't bring him in for an interview. But it's just that their lack of a fit, right? I mean, particularly with Greg Roman, just don't see that as a fit with the kind of offense he wants to run. And the Ravens are partially moving on from him because they want a more modern, like, West Coast offense, right? Like, that's why they're moving on from Greg Roman, you know, in the interest of trying to maximize all you're getting out of Lamar Jackson. And, you know, it's very well known that, like, free agents haven't wanted to play in Baltimore because of the type of offense that Greg Roman runs.
Especially free agent receivers, yeah.
Right. So, you know, if you kind of want to make, like, the Chargers that type of offense, like, I mean, not saying Greg Roman's a bad coordinator per se, but, like, it's just not what the Chargers need or looking for, not a fit with what Staley has said is kind of the agenda of this offensive coordinator search. Either Byron Leftwich, yeah. pretty tough for Byron Leftwich to turn down the Jags job and have Doug Peterson playing on Divisional Sunday. Kind of tough for him. But I mean, yeah, I mean, as soon as Bruce Arians left, that Bucs offense kind of went down the gutter. Yeah, you could say Brady didn't have the strongest arm, and maybe that affected his play calling in terms of doing so many screens and stuff like that. But it's not like Brady's had the most arm strength since he came to Tampa Bay at 42 years old, right? So, yeah. Like, to me, that's not really like an excuse to defend Byron Leftwich's performance this year. And, you know, to me, he's just not the kind of guy that I would bring in to maximize Justin Herbert at this stage of his career.
Yeah, I mean, what a coaching butterfly effect, right? Like, imagine if Doug Peterson doesn't get a Jacksonville job and where things are at, just in general, obviously for this team in particular. If the Byron Leftwich is their coach, probably don't make the playoffs. Doug Peterson, who knows where he ends up. So, very interesting. Arjun has talked about all year long, the best offense that the Buccaneers have had all in 2022 was their hurry up offense when Brady was calling plays. So
I thought it was just interesting to follow up. Arjun, I think, was the one who I think retweeted a stat that both Byron Leftwich on wildcard weekend and Joe Lombardi on wildcard weekend had the highest percentage of perfectly covered plays against them. Byron Leftwich at 60% and Joe Lombardi at 58%. So the Chargers obviously said pass on Joe Lombardi for next year, and I think in the same vein, pass on Byron Leftwich.
Yeah, I don't know when I'll watch the film of that playoff game, if at all, but you know, Arjun also pointed out like the amount of times that Keenan Allen was used as like the motion man and like the decoy just like was not fun. So all right, guys, any other thoughts about the offensive coordinator news that we have thus far?
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Nope, not really.
All right, cool. So we will change gears now. We're going to talk about our top 10 Chargers of the 2022 season. This is not top 10 overall. You know, there are going to be some big names missing from each of our lists. So I'm sure that's going to be a fun rationalization on Twitter. But, you know, this is specifically unique to this particular season. So, like, Joey Bosa, like, I think, in my opinion, would be, like, a top right. three Charger overall.
Right.
He's not going to be on this list because he didn't play enough games. So, in that regard, before we jump into the actual lists, you know, the three of us were talking beforehand just about, in particular, how we were going to value Mike Williams and Keenan Allen on this list because they didn't play a ton of games. Obviously, Mike Williams only ended up missing four regular season games, but he also didn't finish three others. You know, Keenan Allen, I think he officially missed, what was it, 8 games in total, didn't finish 2 others. So, Tyler, we'll start with you. How did you kind of weigh the injuries in terms of those particular players and maybe some others as well?
Yeah, this one was tough because I think the entire list has maybe one or two players who actually played every game, whether they were, you know, elite or they whatever happened. Like, everyone was hurt at some point, or everyone got food poisoning, or someone was like not even the starter at one point. You know who I'm talking about. You know, it's so tough to look at this list and really sort them because of everything that happened this year. I weighed heavily against the wide receivers this year because of the games that they missed. Not even just the games they missed, it's also the games they didn't finish. You know, Keenan Allen comes in for a quarter against the Raiders. You know, Mike Williams has one catch against the Chiefs. You know, a lot of these guys aren't even finishing games. So even if they played, you know, 13 and 10 games or whatever it was, they only finished like 10 and 8. You know, so it's really tough to look at those guys. And, I mean, spoiler alert, neither of those receivers are in my top 10 this year. I want to represent what happened in 2022 and the best players of 2022 in that particular season. Would they be in my top 10 players on the Chargers? Absolutely. And I loved what Keenan Allen did to end the season. I love what Mike Williams did throughout, you know, most of the season when he was on the field. And I think those guys belong in the top 10 Chargers. But as it pertains just to 2022, even though they were very, very good to great when they were on the field, it wasn't enough for me to put them in my top 10.
I have one of them in my top 10.
Yeah, I also have one, but I totally understand. It's so difficult to look at this list, right? And like, Mike Williams had a very, very good first seven games. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, he kind of tailed off. He was also injured. Keenan Allen is injured, has a slow start coming back from injury. And then he closes the season with a super strong finish to the season. So it's tough to really kind of place where those players are at. Obviously, there were some, you know, other players who kind of took a step back this year, other players who were injured and everything. So very curious to see how this one ends up. So if you're in the chat right now, you want to drop your top 10 list, feel free and do so. And we'll pull some comments up and talk about them. Otherwise, we'll jump right in here. So it looks like we have two honorable mention spots here. And Alex, we'll start with you first. In terms of honorable mentions, who would you have there?
My two honorable mentions are Khalil Mack and Asante Samuel Jr. Did not get into my list. I think Khalil Mack was probably the closest one. Ended up with 56 pressures, which was very adjacent to his 2020 season prior to being injured in 2021. Thought he was very good for what it was worth, and I think for most of the season he had a really hard job because obviously Joey Bosa was not out there, you know, for most of the year, and then Kyle Van Noy didn't turn it on until really December, right? So for it was kind of like he was the only good edge rusher on the team for quite a large portion of the season. For him to play the way he did, I think he definitely started stronger than he finished, but still, I think you gotta have him just like on a pure effort basis. You know, he was, you know, one of the guys on this team that obviously played every game. And so I kind of have to give it to him in that sense, even if it wasn't a dominant season for him, relative to what we come to expect from Khalil Mack. I still thought it was very good. And then Asante Samuel Jr. showed a lot of growth this year. Obviously, unfortunately, his three interception game against Jacksonville is kind of going to be forgot about in the annals of history. But overall, he, you know, showed a lot of development and growth this year and was part of why that secondary, especially after everything that happened with J.C. Jackson earlier in the year, him and Michael Davis are hugely responsible for the fact that this secondary and the third level of the defense in particular did not fall apart. So overall, those are my two honorable mentions. I kind of wanted to include DeAndre Carter in here. Now, I know that that's going to get backlash, but here's the thing, okay? DeAndre Carter was asked to be the wide receiver 5 on this team. He ends up playing, having to play the wide receiver 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5, depending on the given week. Ended up having 600 yards, which was more than anyone except me had him having prior to the season starting. All right? I think there's a case for him being an honorable mention, considering how he stepped up given the injuries. But I didn't put him in there just because I think there were more deserving players. But I think everything he had to do in 2022 was kind of deserving of it.
Yeah, so I thought my honorable mentions or omissions were going to be controversial, but I did not expect Khalil Mack as an honorable mention this on this list.
Yeah, really? Me neither.
I get why you wouldn't put him like top 5 or anything, but I was surprised to see him outside the top 10.
I mean, I don't know. I just, like, to me, I just thought there were 10... not better guys, but I mean guys who were just more crucial to, I mean especially on defense, guys who were more crucial to the defensive performance this season of the Chargers in particular.
Okay. I guess I'll wait to see what your list is. Yeah. First,
no, that's fair.
Okay. I see a couple of comments in the chat about Jamari Salyer. He can almost be like the MVP of this team, but he didn't make my top 10 because yeah. Boy, this team would have sucked without Jamari Salyer. As far as expectations as a rookie, exceeded them by quite a bit. And certainly because he literally was not supposed to be playing that position. So he did really, really well. But no, not in my top 10. Not in my honorable mentions. I tossed and turned on this one. I finally had to remove him. Really no particular reason. It wasn't like, oh, the games were so bad at the end. I had to remove him. But he was in my top 10 for a while. But I couldn't justify it at the very end. Zion Johnson as an honorable mention. Because I loved watching Zion Johnson play this year. There were just a little bit too much inconsistent, you know, too many inconsistencies with the play. to be completely honest, I think he might have had the toughest job out of almost every player on the team this year because of Joe Lombardi calling plays, because of the guys, you know, in and out behind or on either side of him, because of the guys that he faced every single week. I mean, for the back half of the season after the bye, it was like, okay, who's like the second or third best player on the opposing team? Okay, well, they're probably going up against Zion Johnson, and all they're doing are straight dropbacks with Herbert. So he had a tough, tough, tough job. I think when the stats kind of align a bit better and then the play overall aligns a bit better, then easily in the top 10, because what he did for this offense and what he was able to do, the positives are so good. And that's why he's an honorable mention. I just want to see a little bit more from him. And I think next year, you know, I could easily see him in the top 7, top 6, top 5. An other honorable mention I will put, this was tough because they're basically tied for me. So I'll just say Keenan Allen. But to me, it's really either Keenan or Mike Williams. If I had to say who had the better year, I actually would say Keenan Allen, which is weird because I feel like Mike Williams maybe was bigger in bigger moments. But Keenan Allen, the stretch that he finished, I was shocked to see how, well, I mean, on the field, sure, but also statistically, just how good it was. Like Keenan Allen really fell into like the 20s and 30s. Last year when it came to his production on a per play basis. But Keenan Allen this year, it's like, oh, you're better this year in that, and again, only in like, you know, 40% of the season, but he was better in that back, you know, 40% or so than, you know, almost every single receiver in the league. So really, really good there. So if I had to pick one, it would have been Keenan Allen.
Yeah, I think the way that Keenan Allen finished the season is really hard to ignore. And, you know, again, he had the late touchdown against the Broncos. Like, I understand, like, you know, that was kind of a garbage time play. But, I mean, he was top three in targets, catches, and yards from week 11 to the end of the season. And, you know, I think people have talked about that. But, you know, I think one of the better ways to evaluate wide receiver play is that yards per route run statistic that we have on Pro Football Focus. And he registered his highest since 2018 in yards per route run this season, coming off of a hamstring injury. So I just think like what he meant to the offense and Justin Herbert, and, you know, Tyler has talked about this a few times, just like kind of bringing the best version of Herbert out again. I think it's hard for me to ignore that. So, you know, I have him in my top 10 at number 10 just because of the injuries. Like, it's hard for me to ignore those. But he played at such a high level down the close of the season. So I also have Zion in my honorable mentions. I think like the way that he performed this season is kind of a mixed bag depending on who you talk to, right? But I think just the dependability, reliability that he performed this season was incredible. So like if you really sit down and watch the way that the Chargers tried to, you know, identify their identity in the run game, it was through Zion. Like around the halfway point of the season, they started making Zion the linchpin of their run game, whether it was him pulling, whether it was him at, you know, executing double teams, whether it was him getting to the second level. Like, he was their best run blocker for the majority of the season. And, you know, that's on a team featuring Corey Lindsey, who's gonna be much higher on this list for me. So, you know, Zion, I think you can certainly see some of the weaknesses, right? Like, I think he certainly struggled with identifying stunts and games in particular. You know, a lot of that is because he was playing part of the season next to Will Clapp, part of it next to Foster Sorrell. Like, certainly not ideal circumstances for his rookie season, but I think that his rookie season was still a success for me just because of the development that he showed as a run blocker, the dependability in that regard. And frankly, just being a force in the run game. Like, I think he is an outstanding run blocker. If you're into PFF grades, I know they're very hit or miss, but he was the 15th highest graded guard in run blocking this year on PFF. So, you know, just a very solid rookie season, and excited to see where he goes from here. My other honorable mention is going to be Bryce Callahan. I just have to give him a shout out the way that he was able to shut down the slot this year. You know, he allowed, I think it was like the second fewest yards per any of any slot corner, like full-time slot corner per PFF. So just a fantastic season. you could really feel the difference in terms of like run defense when you had to put like Josiah Taylor in the slot or take him out of the game. So I don't think he put up like huge numbers by any means. I mean, he didn't get targeted a ton, but just the calming factor that he played with, you know, we saw down the stretch him used more frequently as a blitzer. I thought that was a really cool wrinkle throughout the season. So I wanted to give him a shout out because I don't think that, you know, they don't have a top 10 passing defense without Bryce Callahan essentially shutting down the slot every single week this year.
Yeah, Bryce Callahan was the guy that I rotated into my top 10 instead of someone like Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, or Zion Johnson. I don't think he finished the year as strong as he would have liked. I feel bad because there was a couple times where it just felt like he was on the end of like impossible plays. You know, that Patrick Mahomes throw, like he was shut down the entire game. And then Mahomes made some incredible throw, and it just happened to be on Bryce Callahan. So like the numbers at the end of the year, you know, weren't as strong as the beginning of the year. It was basically like, okay, 20 yards or less per game for the first like 9 or 10 games of the year.
Yeah.
But I still wanted to rotate him in because of, you know, how he played in the slot overall, that role as a blitzer. And I think he did a fantastic job. Seriously, a huge upgrade over last year's, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Alex, we'll start with you here. We'll go, each go 10 through 7, like we did for draft videos and stuff like that. And then we'll do 6 through 4 and then 3 through 1. So, Alex, you can kick us off there with 10 through 7.
Number 10, I have Mike Williams. At number 9, I have Morgan Fox. At number 8, I have Drew Tranquil. And at number 7, I have Bryce Callahan.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, I just think you have to have the trio of Davis, Callahan, and Asante Samuel Jr. in our top 12 or however we're orienting this, because they just played really well in the secondary, and especially the way that each guy had to step up after J.C. Jackson obviously, you know, kind of struggled in the beginning of the year and wasn't playing and then played and then got hurt. Like this secondary kind of doesn't recover without the performances of all three of those guys. And I think that they got the bad end of what we saw in some of the disorganization of the first and second level of the defenses, particularly against the run. And you know, I think the back end and the third level of the defense was sort of let down by the first two in that regard. But overall, just have to give a shout out to all the guys in the secondary. I put Morgan Fox, and maybe that's a controversial pick over Khalil Mack. I don't know. But for me, Morgan Fox had the best season of his career. He had 40 pressures this year, which is 14 more than his previous career high of 26. And I think the way that he just had to step up in the pass rushing game, specifically in the second half of the year where the team reached a point with Jerry Tillery where they had to let him go. If Morgan Fox doesn't step up, I think this pass rush prior, you know, to Kyle Van Noy getting started up would have been kind of anemic, right? Like, I mean, Morgan Fox stepped up in a big way for this team. I have him in my top 10. Mike Williams or Keenan Allen, I wanted to include one of them on this list.
Yeah, same.
I mean, just of them, both of them were 800 plus yard players, even with the missed time that they both had. So, you know, obviously some games they didn't finish. I just kind of went with Keenan, missed a few more games, and to me, Mike, sort of like Tyler said, had more defining moments, right? But it's kind of like there are drives that I can remember from Keenan Allen where he was just kind of like a monster for the Chargers, or specific catches that I can remember. But like Keenan kind of racked up those stats towards the end of the year. I'm not saying they were empty stats because obviously he had very good games, but I just didn't think that each one was like a particularly memorable, like, oh, that's the Keenan Allen game, right? Like in terms of the offense this year. So that's kind of why I sided with Mike Williams over Keenan Allen. And then Drew Tranquil. I think Drew Tranquil is a really good mention here, and obviously had the career year. He's either going to get paid or he'll get the same $3 million that Kaiser White got after a career year. Either one is possible. But by get paid for a linebacker, I mean like get like $5 million. But I mean, yeah, Drew Tranquil just had a really solid year. I think he stepped up in a big way after Kaiser left. And if it wasn't for him, the linebacker room kind of would have been a disaster. And so for me, he absolutely deserves a spot defensively on this list.
Yeah, and I really like this group. Morgan Fox over Khalil Mack. I don't know if it's a controversial take. I will say that if you look at it just in terms of defensive tackle versus edge rusher, Morgan Fox was better at his position
right.
on a per play basis than Khalil Mack was. So I understand how you could make that argument there. Bryce Callahan being out there, I totally get. Asante Samuel Jr., I would have had potentially in my top 10 or honorable mention, if not for the sort of end of the year, maybe really from like the Titans game on, where suddenly they were taking him off the field for John Taylor. And at the point, and at the point where you're now, whether I agree or disagree with that, that's a whole different thing. But if you're being taken off the field because they don't trust you to play run defense, it's hard to put you, you know, in the top players, because he had such a good year, I think, in coverage. And then just kind of like the last third of the year, you know, they didn't really trust him to play the run for whatever reason, with stuff to put him in there. But I still like you including all three corners, because I mean, without those three corners, I don't know what we would have seen this year. I mean, we saw it when Michael Davis got hurt against the Jaguars. Look what happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and I'm sure Michael Davis would be up higher for all of us.
Yeah. So I'm glad Alex is highlighting Drew Tranquil. I'm sure he's going to be in a similar area for me and Tyler as well. I think one of the bigger pleasant surprises this year was the way that they started to use him as a pass rusher. You know, that we saw some flashes of it early last season, but it was never really like his thing. And then this year, you know, I forget the exact amount of pressures and sacks, but just a really fun way that they would kind of get after the quarterback. I mean, the Chargers ended up, I think, fourth in blitz rate this year. And a lot of that was because, you know, they wanted to get Drew Tranquil and kind of get him going after the passer. So, Tyler, what's your 10 through 7?
Okay, so my 10 through 7, I did rotate Bryce Callahan in. I really wanted to put Zion there. It was between him and Bryce, but I went with Bryce Callahan. At number 9, I have Trey Pipkins, a player that if he had stayed healthy the entire year, I think would have been a lot higher. It's just like that's kind of like where the injuries kind of came in there. But Trey Pipkins, when he was on the field, excellent work. And seriously, biggest surprise of the year to everyone except for, I guess, Trey Pipkins. And even then, I think he surprised himself. I have Morgan Fox after that at number 8. And then at number 7, I have Derwin James. And that's going to be probably very controversial because in terms of top 10 players on the team, he's, you know, 5th at worst. But I just felt like there were too many moments this year. Not that there weren't outstanding moments, but there were some other moments where there was a little bit left to be desired. And I think some other guys on defense stepped up maybe just a bit more.
Yeah, we'll see where Alex and I have Derwin. But, you know, I think the end of the season was definitely not ideal. And I think Derwin would admit that, right? I think the concussion in particular really affected the way that he was not being as physical and aggressive. And then also he wasn't really used as a pass rusher the second half of the season very much either, which I think is not necessarily his fault. But I can understand why you'd have him here. I mean, he missed some time as well. Like I mentioned, the concussion, the quad injury. You know, the last 4 or 5 games wasn't necessarily the best version of Derwin. So I'm going to have him a couple spots higher, but I understand why you'd put him where you put him. All right. So for me, I mentioned him. I'm going to have Keenan at number 10. I think it's just, it's really hard for me to ignore the way that just the sheer amount of importance and value that he brought to the passing game down the stretch. Definitely, you know, the injuries and some of the inflation at the end of the season certainly, you know, making an impact there. I also have Trey Pipkins at number 9. You know, I think his talking about PFF grades, I think his run blocking grade is ridiculously low for me. I think him and Zion did some great work in the run blocking department. And like, if you really look at his pass blocking efficiency and where he ranks, man, it's insane to me to like look back to how we were talking about this player even 6 months ago. So you filter PFF to 50% of tackles with 50% of their respective team snaps. The top 10 is a lot of names, so you think, in terms of pass blocking efficiency. First of all, Tristan Wirfs and Lane Johnson are playing completely nasty different sports. It's just insane. But then you look at the rest of this list in terms of right tackles. I mean, like, and total offensive tackles, Trey Pipkins tied for 20th with guys like Deion Dawkins and Braden Smith. He's higher than Colton Miller, higher than Taylor Decker, Donovan Smith. He's higher than, you know, Ikemi Kwanu, who was a top 5 draft pick. He's higher than Orlando Brown. He's higher than Charles Leno, who's a really solid player. Higher than Jedrick Wills, who's a really solid player. Higher than Jordan Mailata, who's a really good left tackle. Like, it's just insane to me to look at this list of where Trey Pipkins is in pass blocking efficiency, just in general, right? But then also he spent basically the second half of the season battling an MCL injury. And, you know, when I interviewed Zion, like, they all looked at Trey and the way that he battled through that and really, like, respected him that much more because of the way that he was fighting through that for the team. I think everybody kind of knew what they had behind Trey Pipkins. And so Pipkins being able to battle through that injury, I think, was huge for this team. Like, they do not make the playoffs without Trey Pipkins developing this way. Mm-hmm. They do not make the playoffs with him battling through this injury. And, you know, he was just a real steadying presence for me at right tackle all season long, and absolutely deserves to get paid and be back with this team next year. All right. So next I have Drew Tranquil, who we've kind of talked about a little bit. And then at number seven is where I have Morgan Fox. So I understand if you want to put Morgan Fox higher, I understand if you want to put him lower. Per play basis, you know, he was top five in most mm-hmm. pass rushing departments in the defensive tackle world. So you want to talk about a real value signing in free agency. I think Morgan Fox was absolutely one of the better ones.
Yeah, Morgan Fox, I think if he had started the season the way he finished things, really once they got rid of Jerry Tillery and when guys started getting hurt, it was down to him. They did not have another pass rushing option at all, nothing even close. But so if he had started the season like that, the way he finished, and I guess you can say the same for like a Kyle Van Noy too, but Morgan Fox, man, was outstanding. So Morgan Fox could have been a top three player this year if he started the way he finished.
Yeah, just officially really quickly. So he ended up with 42 total pressures, which is 15th among defensive tackles. Seven sacks, which is a high quality number of sacks, that is tied for 13th. His pass rush productivity, which is a per play efficiency rating, tied for 8th in the league mm-hmm. with DeForest Buckner and just behind JJ Watt and Cam Hayward. And then his win percentage was 8th in the league, just behind DeForest Buckner and Quinnen Williams. So just a really effective player this year against the pass. And I thought he was pretty good against the run as well. Not necessarily like their best run defender by any means, but mm-hmm. had some good moments in that regard too.
Yeah, he was not super hot to start the year. That's kind of where he was a bit more weak. But then as soon as they needed him to step up, and there was that interview with him, Fajoko, and Joseph Day, where he said, I just had to learn to love the nitty gritty and playing the run and getting in there and just being tough because my team needed me to. Guys got hurt. And I, as a usual pass rusher, had to step up and get and love stopping the run. And he really did in that second half. And that's why he belongs on this list.
Yep. Absolutely. All right, Alex, we'll get to your six through four here.
Number six, I have Michael Davis. At number five, I have Trey Pipkins. And at number four, I have Corey Linsley.
I thought I was going to be high on Trey Pipkins heading in today. Look at that.
Yeah, offensive line guy. I have two of my top five. I mean, look, they don't survive the season without Trey Pipkins. And I remember, like Steven said, we were talking about Trey Pipkins and Storm Norton in the offseason. Like, it was rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic. It was just like, which one do you want to go with? And, like, maybe we had slightly more belief in Trey Pipkins because of the, you know, the way that he closed last year in the two games that he played. The Duke Mannyweather stuff. But aside from that, like, there wasn't a whole lot of reason to have a lot of institutional faith in Trey Pipkins, and he proved everyone wrong in, like, a big way, right? He gives up 28 pressures on 900 snaps, basically, which is not what I would have projected going into the season. He was just an insane calming presence, right? And especially when Rashawn Slater gets hurt on the other side and they're, you know, cycling through options. I mean, really, at left tackle, whether that was Jamari Salyer, Storm Norton, who came into that Jacksonville game initially, you know, I think you can dock him points for injuries, and obviously, but, you know, he fought through an MCL the whole season, and to perform mm-hmm. as well as he did in the games he played while having a sprained MCL and going through that injury and re-aggravating it and coming back, and to not really, he never really had like a, this is the Trey Pipkins implode game, right? Which is what we had seen in like previous seasons. Never had it, right? And I think that that's, you know, a big thing for why Trey Pipkins is so high. Corey Linsley is self-explanatory. I mean, he's one of the best centers in the league, and, you know, was basically the same this year. And Michael Davis. Did not think we would be talking about Michael Davis as a top six Charger entering the season. But, I mean, he's the best part of, you know, other than Derwin James, who will be on our list, he's the best part of the secondary. And, you know, was a huge reason why this team even came close to the playoffs. Because if Michael Davis doesn't play the way that he did against several number one receivers, this team, I don't think, comes close to the playoffs, especially after the way J.C. Jackson, you know, unfortunately got injured. Michael Davis was just huge this year, and the leap that he took. I mean, we were talking about him as a cut candidate along with Matt Filer.
A surefire cut candidate.
Yeah, surefire cut candidate, right? It's like, well, you see, you can save $7 million. There's a, you know, cap hit of $9 million, dead cap of $2 million, you know, then it's an easy decision, right? But now you're potentially getting number one cornerback level play for, you know, $9 million next year. So absolutely, he has changed what his tenure was with the Chargers in a huge way. And you just kind of look at the way he was deployed in 2021 by Brandon Staley versus the way that the circumstances forced him to be deployed this year in terms of how the team used him. And I think that he just kind of, I don't want to say he proved Brandon Staley wrong in a way, but he kind of did, right? Brandon Staley never really envisioned Michael Davis as his number one corner, especially in 2021 and especially going into this year. And I think he proved us wrong too. So, you know, Michael Davis for, you know, he kind of looked like the player, an improved version of the player that we saw towards the end of 2020, you know, and kind of the guy that we really expected to step up after, you know, Casey Hayward left the team. So 2021 was kind of like a weird time, but he's really grown into that guy that we sort of expected to see last year.
Even Tom Telesco had to shout him out in the end of season presser as a guy like, yeah. You know, he didn't want to try to single out specific players, but he said, you know, Michael Davis, he, you know, improved, he got paid, and then things just didn't really work out as well that first year. New coach, new system. I can't believe how well Michael Davis played. He's very high on my list, not number one or anything, but, you know, very high on my list because of, I mean, when he was inserted as the true starter. You know, once J.C. Jackson went down, it's like one of the best corners in the league. I mean, Steven talked about to end the season. Like, you could have legitimately argued in terms of when he was playing as that starter, as like a second team all-pro type, just outstanding football and the best football he's ever played in his career, because it was more than just, you know, the coverage. It was also just getting his hands on the football. I mean, he was doing everything so well, so scheme sound. Just outstanding work, and I didn't expect that. I kind of thought that Asante Samuel Jr. lost the job in camp and that Michael Davis earned it and deserved to be out there. I kind of figured that Davis would be, you know, potentially the better of the two, but they just had him as a gunner. And I understand, like, you pay J.C. Jackson. I completely understand why they decided to find someone else to upgrade over someone like a Michael Davis. I understand why they did, but, I mean, this guy was a gunner. And now he's, I mean, you could have argued he was second team All-Pro last year. It's crazy, but good for him.
Yeah, absolutely. Ended up leading the league by a pretty good margin in forcing completions from week 9 on for the Chargers. And, you know, it sucks because that him getting injured against the Jaguars changed the game. Like, yep. Nobody wants to talk about it that way, but, you know, the Chargers pass defense just imploded without him. So, Tyler, you're 6-4.
Okay, 6 and 7. So Derwin James and this player could have been interchangeable. It's Drew Tranquil. I thought that he had, well, obviously, very easily had his best season. I think it was 100 solo tackles, 50-something run stops. You talk about the games he took over as a pass rusher, you know, the guy that had doing crazy things in coverage that I don't think they've had a Chargers linebacker do and do successfully in quite some time. You talk about, like, the interception against the Raiders in week 1. Just outstanding work. So Drew Tranquil there for me. I did like his season just a bit over someone like Derwin James. Number 5, I do have Khalil Mack. Not Khalili Mack. I have Khalil Mack, who I thought had a good season. I think it's tough, and I think even Joey Bosa said as much. Like, I'm sorry I wasn't out there. You know, Khalil Mack, he was traded here. It's not like he signed up to be here. But, you know, the intention was to have him and Joey Bosa. And after 2.2 weeks, it was just Khalil Mack by himself with, you know, Kyle Van Noy still trying to figure things out and Chris Rumpf not being super effective. So I think he maybe would have been hired in a normal season, but I do have to appreciate what he was able to do and how he's able to, you know, absorb double teams, triple teams, and just be the guy, you know, that defenses had to focus on. So guys like Morgan Fox and, you know, Kyle Van Noy could have better seasons. And then at number four, I do have Austin Ekeler, who statistically, in terms of the numbers he put up, probably should be in my top three. I just admire a certain corner and two other players a bit more.
Totally understandable. We'll get to them in a second here. Yeah, in terms of Khalil Mack, I have him in my top six as well. I have him right at number six. You know, I think on a per play basis, you're not talking about him in the same kind of world as you're talking about some of these other edge rushers, right? But he did end up 15th in total pressures with 59. He had 9 sacks, 6 quarterback hits. You know, his pass rush win rate is kind of dipped a little bit. It's 14.5, which is kind of, you know, middle of the pack in terms of edge rushers with 50% of their snaps. And so on a per play pass rusher basis, like, he didn't have his best year. But like, if you would have told all of us before the season that, hey, Joey Bosa is going to miss basically the entire season, what would you kind of expect out of Khalil Mack at that point? For him to end up at 59 total pressures and 9 sacks, I think is a win. And then I think you also talk about his ability as a run defender and the way that he's able to set the edge and effectively, you know, hold down that side of the ball. Like, I think it's noteworthy, obviously, that other teams usually ran to the other side of Khalil Mack. But I think his ability as a run defender, like, if you want to talk about, like, the, you know, trade-off between him and Uchenna and Wosu, and, like, what Uchenna and Wosu was able to do for the Seahawks this year, I think that's kind of the difference. Because as pass rushers, I think they're pretty even, in my opinion. But as a run defender, I'm taking Khalil Mack all day. And then I think also, like, his ability as a leader, you know, really kind of turned around the season for the Chargers defense. And, you know, we heard about the team dinners and things like that he was organizing. So while you don't necessarily see that kind of effect, I think it does deserve some mention. So I have Khalil Mack at number six. I have Derwin James at number five, for a lot of the same reasons that Tyler has highlighted. And then I also have Austin Ekeler at number four. So,
Okay.
Yeah, not as an egregious take as you might think, Tyler. So I agree with that. I think it's hard to, like, ignore the 20 touchdowns that he put up and the way that he,
right.
He was really essentially, like, the only passing weapon that Justin Herbert really trusted. But in terms of the run production, like, his primary job is to run the football, and I think there was a lot of up and down moments there. So if you're nitpicking a little bit, I don't think that you can really say that Austin Ekeler is, like, one of the best at his position. While I think the touchdowns might, you know, say otherwise, and it's tough to nitpick somebody who broke the franchise record for receptions this year. But I think if you can be a little nitpicky in terms of him versus the other three players that I will have in my top three.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I ended up putting Austin Ekeler in my top three, as I think is, you know, easily visible based on our list at this point. Yeah. You know, it's a tough thing because I think it's a debate as to what he specifically means to the Chargers versus where you would put him around the league. And I sort of went with the first thing in terms of putting him in my top three because, no, I would not call Austin Ekeler a top five pure running back. I also probably would not call him a top 10 pure running back, right? Like, and that's kind of why he didn't make the Pro Bowl, right? But he's obviously one of the top three receiving backs in the league. And, you know, just the total effect of this team. He's the only running back, you know, only one of the few receivers that Justin Herbert could trust throughout the season. Certainly one of the only receivers that Joe Lombardi trusted throughout various points of this season. But, you know, I have him. Well, I guess I'll get to my top three now. Derwin James is number three for me. I have Austin Ekeler at number two. And then, of course, number one is... Oh, I think you're typing in the wrong spot, Tyler.
That's fine.
Oh, okay. Well,
I get it.
Yeah, I have Derwin at three, Ekeler at two, and Herbert at one. Yeah, Derwin ended up... I think he did have a few games towards the end of the season where he did kind of, like, show some signs of regression. Obviously, there was the way the Indianapolis game ended, which was kind of unfortunate for him. Gets injured in that game with the concussion, and then the Denver game, yeah, not his best tape to kind of, like, leave the season on. But still, I mean, you look at the numbers, and it's the lowest passer rating he's ever allowed of his career. It's the lowest number of yards he's ever allowed in his career as a defender. Tied for 2018 in terms of the amount of sacks he had. You know, still was working as a pass rusher as well. So for me, I, you know, and obviously the NFL and the media members also voted him second team All-Pro, you know, substantive that he was the only Chargers All-Pro nomination, you know. So for me, the way that Brandon Staley could just trust Derwin James to kind of do everything, I think really produced his best, probably most complete season that we've seen from him since his rookie year, I would argue, in 2018. So yeah, that's why Derwin James is number three for me. Eckler, pretty self-explanatory. Eckler is pretty self-explanatory here at number two. Just a total offensive weapon for the Chargers that they could trust in any given time. You know, I think if I were to nitpick, yeah, certainly the running stuff, but like to me, that's more of a scheme thing than an Eckler thing, right? Especially as it was visible in the Jags game, right? As to, you know, what the Chargers were doing schematically wrong to not be able to pick up yards on the ground with Austin Eckler. And then we saw in the games that they did scheme up well. Austin Eckler, still pretty good running back. And then Justin Herbert is number one. Everything that he fought through this year, the rib injury, Joe Lombardi, you know, a lot of things that he fought through this year. And so for me, Justin Herbert ends up, even though obviously it's not statistically his best season, not even statistically his second best season when you know, look at the total numbers. But for me, I think you've got to give a lot of credit to what Herbert was able to do. And, you know, he was single-handedly saving the Chargers in games that they really didn't have business winning. Particularly, I look in that two-week stretch of the Miami game. I look in that stretch of that two-week stretch of Miami and Tennessee really kind of defined Justin Herbert for me. Not the greatest game against Tennessee, but nothing was working on offense, really, until we kind of get that last iconic Herbert moment where he puts that ball right on Mike Williams and kind of wins the game for the Chargers that way. So, yeah, for me, obviously the Miami game is probably my favorite overall Herbert game from this year. You could point to the Kansas City game with the cracked rib where, you know, he just threads in a beautiful ball to DeAndre Carter through everything, right? So, yeah, I assume that you guys have a similar top three. I know Tyler will have Michael Davis in his top three. But for me, you know, we all kind of have similar top sixes, and these are just the guys that I thought deserved it a little bit more. I think someone mentioned Jamari Salyer in the chat. If I had, you know, another honorable mention spot, I kind of would have put him in there. But I also just didn't think that when I looked at the overall offensive line play that he wasn't at the level of, like, Zion, who I didn't even have in my list, Lindsley or Pipkins. But, I mean, would have been an honorable mention if I obviously kind of had another spot.
Yeah, as we said earlier, you know, in terms of value and importance, like, you probably make the case for Jamari Salyer for, like, number one on that list. But if you're talking about just, like, pure performance, I think it's understandable to not have him on the list. I think for me, for Derwin, I think if you had been able to see what he was doing for the first 11 weeks across a whole season, I think you'd be talking about the number one player on this list. I think what he was doing in those first 11 weeks as a coverage player, I mean, we saw him essentially play edge rusher for like half the game against the 49ers, and the way that he was pass rushing and getting after the quarterback and all of the things that he was doing, you know, just on this defense to keep it afloat. I mean, you know, covering DeAndre Hopkins and covering Devontae Adams. Like, I think his first 11, 12 games were truly, truly elite. And I think, frankly, that's why he was, you know, second team all pro. So it's just, unfortunately, we didn't really see him finish the season that way. I think you saw him have some really poor moments against the Broncos and some poor moments against the Jaguars. You know, and unfortunately, I think you just didn't see him peaking at the right time, if you want to use that usual cliche.
Yeah, I would say that in particular, I guess Austin Eckler and Michael Davis, like, they really started to, they finished a bit stronger. So it's in a bit of a what have you done for me lately sort of thing. I just feel like those two jumped someone like Derwin James because of the way that they finished.
All right, Tyler, let's finish your top three here.
Okay, the wait is over. Michael Davis jumps in at number three. Honestly, again, if he had played the entire year, you could consider him over Justin Herbert, which sounds insane, but this is an MVP list. This is a top 10 players list. But no, he's not over Justin Herbert, so calm down. Number two, I have Corey Linsley, who, honestly, again, if he had played the entire year, he probably would have been over Justin Herbert, and I think probably the favorite between him and Davis. because Corey Linsley allowed 5 pressures this season, and that's disgusting. I don't know how that's even possible, but Corey Linsley, I think it was 5 pressures, and I think last year was like 7 or something. What he's been doing over the last 2 years has been outstanding, but the food poisoning, the knee issue, whatever it was, the tendonitis knocks him down just a tiny bit. But I would argue when he was on the field, he was the best at his position. And then number one, Justin Herbert, who did not have his like best season, or at least the best season that he could have had, but still had an excellent season. And at the end of the day, you know, 9 out of 10 times, Justin Herbert was the best player on the field for the Chargers. So he's number one for me.
Yeah, so I have the exact same top three as Tyler. I really thought for a little bit to put Corey Linsley at number one. I did, and I think if he had played the whole season, I think he probably would have been. again, PFF's offensive line grades, I think, are kind of a mess, but he was 8 full points ahead of the next highest graded pass blocking center. 8 points in pass blocking grade. That is absurd. And the way that he was, you know, handling everything up front, I think we saw, you know, pretty clearly the difference in terms of, you know, him versus Will Clapp, who I think is actually kind of like a fine backup center. But the way that Corey Linsley was handling everything was just incredible this year. And, you know, 7 total pressures, if you want to include the playoff game, pass blocking efficiency rating, a career high this year for Corey Linsley, who's been a second team all pro center, a Pro Bowl center. And he had a career high in pass blocking efficiency this year, 99.4, best in the league. So I think you also see his value as a run blocker quite often. I think Zion was pretty clearly like the best, not clearly, but I think Zion was the best run blocker. But Corey Linsley was right there neck and neck with him all season. And I think, you know, the way that they kind of use him is just remarkable. So people talking about getting a future center, I'm not there yet. I still think Corey Linsley has 2 years less. 2 years left of elite play. I think he's been fantastic. And then, yeah, man, Michael Davis, like we already talked about a little bit. I thought that him versus Derwin was an interesting debate for me. I ended up putting him ahead of Eckler as well. Just like corner, it, to me, is probably like the second hardest position to play in football, like especially with the way that the rules are made today. And so the way that he was just shutting that part of the field down, I think, is fantastic. And the way that he was able to essentially go from, you know, backup to being their best corner to being like the focal point of their coverage schemes, I think it just was so much fun watching Michael Davis this year. And, you know, I wanted to, you know, honor his journey this year in the right way. So I put him at 3. And then you guys kind of covered it for Justin Herbert. I mean, it sucks. Like his rib injury, I think, will, you know, affected him more than even he would admit. And, you know, he still ended up like 3rd in the league in passing yards, still had some great moments, had to play most of the season without, you know, his 2 best receivers on the field, and still just, you know, put it out there all online. So, you know, this team, I think you could maybe make an argument for Corey Linsley had a better season than Justin Herbert, like I said, but this team and the way that Justin Herbert just took a huge step this forward in terms of like ownership of the offense, ownership of passing schemes, ownership of, you know, taking a bigger leadership role this year. Like, I think Justin Herbert, even though he didn't like take a huge step, like from a production standpoint, I think he took a huge step in terms of a leader on the field, in terms of the face of the franchise. And I think you have to put him at number one because of that.
Yep. How close were we to Cameron Dicker in the top 10?
You know what? I actually had I had an idea for a spot where I was just going to put Dicker, Hopkins, Bertolette as legs.
I did too.
I thought about doing it, and I narrowed. I think they were like the 15th like player that I might have like cut out, but yeah. I did have a spot for that just because of obviously Ryan Ficken, the improvement of special teams, and the fact that all 3 of those guys have like all 3 of them have a game winner. Yeah, Dicker had a game winner. Bertolette had a game winner against Cleveland. Yeah,
I believe so.
Yeah, and then Hopkins obviously in the infamous Denver Monday Night Football game. So yeah, like the fact that they made field goals this year, and you know they really didn't like. I mean, Dicker obviously missed against the Jags, which you know kind of ends the season on a bad note. But overall, like there's never been a Chargers kicking game that's been this good, and it's even more crazy when you consider that there were three guys who kicked field goals. And it wasn't just because, oh, they cut a guy and then they brought another guy in. Like, they did it out of necessity, and it somehow still worked. So, I mean, that's like a pretty crazy thing.
Yeah, I think if we had hit, or if he had hit a couple more 50-yarders, and you could tell from like that range he was also, you know, performing really well, I think he'd be there. But I think he had the 50-yarder, right, but no 51 or higher?
I don't
think so. Or was the 50-yarder in the playoffs his career high?
The 50-yarder was the playoffs, yeah.
Okay, yeah, so... I wanted to find some way. I love what you talked about, Alex, about all three kickers being in there. Because you want to just kind of, not Jumbotron, what's the Voltron? I don't know. What's the Transformers thing? Yeah, you want to just assemble them together. I think that would be a fine decision.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of is a Voltron of all of them together, because it's Hopkins for the first four or five games, then Bertolet, then Hopkins came back, then Dicker. I mean, just the way that that whole thing played out. And the fact that the Chargers still made the playoffs, given the situation of having to play three kickers throughout the season, and like none of them ever had like an egregiously bad game, you know, during the regular season, just nothing you can dream of as a Chargers fan, given, especially if you go back to like anything from like 2016 to 2020. So this was pretty unprecedented.
Yeah, we're going to get a legitimate kicker battle in training camp probably this year with Dicker and Dustin Hopkins. Maybe. We'll see what kind of state Dustin Hopkins is going forward next year. So I think you could also put like a spot for J.K. Scott in there. I mean, I think J.K. Scott was fine. I think he knows how to punt the ball really far up in the air. But, you know, I think in terms of like punting around the league, I think J.K. Scott is probably a middle of the pack punter. That was a huge upgrade for the Chargers. It was, but I just don't think that merits a top 12 player nomination.
There's kind of a part of me that just wants to put like Ryan Ficken at like number three.
Number one, man.
If you just take the totality of special teams, and I mean, you know, that includes Carter, that includes Scott, that includes the kickers, right? Like, special teams coverage, like all of that kind of stuff. If you could just jumble into one guy, I think it'd be cool. But I definitely was thinking about doing like a kicker spot. But overall, there were just more deserving guys. But I mean, it was close.
Yeah, absolutely. So, that conversation went a little bit longer than I thought it would. I think it was a really good conversation, very valuable conversation. Unfortunately, I don't have time to stick around and take questions. I don't know if you two do, but I think that's probably where we end today's show.
I definitely didn't think it would go for 70 minutes. I am taking questions on the Patreon page, so I'll be answering those either today or tomorrow if I have time, and then I'll get to that. But we're going to take the next week off, yeah?
Yes. We'll see what happens exactly when they hire an offensive coordinator. Daniel Popper is going to be joining our show probably on Monday or Tuesday of next week. So we'll keep you guys posted, but we are planning to take some time away from podcasting for the next little bit, kind of refresh the battery, so to speak, and start watching some draft prospects. So excited for that part of the show to start a little too earlier, but I'm too early in the year, but I'm still excited to start watching prospects. Alex, any final thoughts, man?
Go Birds.
Go Birds. Yes. Tyler, any other final thoughts on anything we talked about today?
Fly Eagles fly, and no Tarmas Martinez. We're not getting Reedy versus Tyler. That'd be interesting. But if we ever did that interview, I would like to do it from my bed.
Shout out Damian Square, man. One of my one of the better media Chargers of the last few years. Are you in bed, Joe? Shout out Square, man. All right, that's going to do it for us. If you guys are listening to this, make sure and leave a rating or a view. If you're watching this, please make sure and like and subscribe. All of that really does help us continue to grow the show, so we really appreciate that. So, this is going to be our last show for the next few days officially, and then we'll start diving into off-season content starting up in 2 weeks from now. So, appreciate all you guys for tuning in. We'll, like I said, we'll keep you posted on the schedule for sure. but we'll be seeing you soon, no doubt.